Charm is deceitful, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Notice that Rod Amonet is not here this evening, who gave me this assignment to talk about the spiritual qualities of three Old Testament women. What do I know about women? I am highly unqualified for this role. But I will do my best to try to find something in the scriptures that's of value, and I expect that you all will help in the study. Almost half, and maybe more of you, being women who do have more authority than I in this subject. My apologies for sending out the guide last night rather than Sunday night or Saturday night. Somehow the time just slips away. I don't know how that happens. Our task is to try to look at three biblical women, Sarah, Deborah, and Abigail. I have no idea what they may have in common and why they were chosen for this study, but we will try to link them up. As the crow flies, it seems like three of them would be 15 minutes each in 45 minutes, but I'm not a math guy. I'm more of a word guy. So we'll start with Sarah and see how that goes, and if we need to, we'll speed up. And if we like what we're talking about, maybe we won't even get to Abigail, which is okay by me. Let's start with a word of prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for all the great blessings that we have in this world, including our food and our clothing and our shelter. We ask that you would help us to recognize that we are dependent on you and that you have given us even greater blessings in your Son and the plan of salvation that you've graciously given to us. We ask that you would help us to study your word, help us to meditate on it, and to understand how we might apply these things and become better, whether we're men or women. And we ask this in your Son's name, amen. Okay. Now, Sarah spans quite a few chapters in Genesis. I don't know if you remember, but it all starts like way back, almost to the beginning, like Genesis 12, because she's there at the first promise. But, you know, it's more around Genesis 16, 17, and those chapters and following where we read about her account more than anything. There's a lot that we know about Sarah, and I want to make sure that we cover facts as well as the questions that we have here. I'm always torn about whether I should go over the facts because the facts might answer some questions or give away some things. Who can tell us about Sarah? Where'd she come from? I'll give you a hint. It was probably around where Abraham was. Right. And she was his wife.
And she was
his half-sister.
Yeah, that's awkward.
There's always been something about that particular relationship. And again, in the times of the Old Testament, there were some other strange things that went on.
Right. You know that old song, Farther Along, We'll Understand Why?
It ends up it's not going to be important.
Right. Well, it actually is important a couple of times. Right. In the present.
I'm not going to run up and say, where's Sarah? I want to talk to her.
Right. Right. Generally, the way I answer the question is, I know what I need to do with my life. You'll have to make decisions about your own. Her name means princess. Did you know that? Sarah means princess. Do you have like a note in your Bible?
My name's Sarah.
Oh, you knew that. Right. Right. Does anyone know how old she was when Isaac was born? Biblical trivia. No, not quite.
90.
Yes, 91, actually. Abraham was 99. Do you know how old she was when Ishmael was born? Dun, dun, dun. You have to do some math on that one. So it was 90. She was 90. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Apparently, she was a nervous laugher. And apparently, she didn't like people laughing at her, which we'll talk about. Her husband sometimes lied about who she was. Not sure how that made her feel. Does anyone know how old she was when she died? Yeah, she made it a long time. We'll talk about all the other stuff in the questions. Okay, so let's have at number one. So initially she laughed at the news of her impending child and actually lied to God about laughing. Can you imagine? God says, why did you laugh? I didn't laugh. That's really funny. Turn over to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11:11 is where she's referenced in the Hall of Faith, which is really interesting because this is where she winds up. And I think one of the questions in a little bit is going to talk about how did she get here? So Hebrews 11:11, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who promised. Well, that's really interesting. Because the next question is about how she made up her own plan to fulfill God's promise, right? Remind us about the story of Hagar. Who was Hagar? Right. And she was from Egypt. You just know all of this. How do you know all this?
Because her name's Sarah.
Oh, right. All right. I'm from Ohio. Yeah. All right. If you do the math, it was 11 years after the promise God made to Abraham that if you look up into the stars, this is how big your offspring will be. And he laughed at first, right? And that was when he was not very old. He was like 65? Or no, she was 65. She was 65 when that promise was made. 11 years after waiting. So she stuck it out for 11 years and then said, you know what? How about you just have a child with Hagar? Which seems really odd to us because I don't know of any woman that would ever give her husband something like that. So what do you think about her idea of giving her handmaid to her husband to have a child? Was go ahead.
Maybe a positive spin on it, and that, you know, she was so convinced that God's plan needed to be accomplished.
Yeah.
It's clearly not working through me, Sarah, and we need to make sure that this happens because God said it. So, you know, things we need to do here.
Thank you, Pollyanna. Yes. And after 11 years, maybe that's not unreasonable. And in those day and times, with concubines and other stuff that we just don't understand today? Maybe that seemed to be a good idea. What was the reality of that idea, though, for her in her journey? You know, she was a journeyer, so this was definitely a turn in her path. What did that actually do to her?
She was resentful.
Yeah. Yeah, she became resentful and bitter.
And she treated her very poorly.
Yeah, mean. She was mean. So she not only was...
Hagar looked on Sarah with contempt.
Well, that's true, too.
Come on, let's start there.
That's true. Yes. She did not employ some good qualities herself.
She got this great...
Yeah, but where did she learn that? Right. Go ahead, Ben.
Just a lesson along the way. 16:2. And Sarah said to Abram, "Behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. So
right.
Go unto my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." So we sometimes draw wrong conclusions.
Yes. Excellent. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, I mean, 11 years is a long time. And the clock was ticking, you know, 65, 76. But, I mean, really, how much more faith does it take to believe that you're going to have a child at 76 than it does at 65? Gary, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, you look at Hannah didn't have any kids. She was in a situation where she was taunted probably tremendously. But yet, she was faithful. She prayed to God. She continued to pray to God. And God blessed her.
True.
Sarah probably could learn from him.
That's a mind. That's like the Back to the Future thing. So interesting. Turn over to 1 Peter 3. Because something did happen. Right? So here's another statement about Sarah. 1 Peter 3. And this is the passage about dressing modestly, and we don't think about Sarah being in here, but she is. In verse 5, after Paul admonishes, "Let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is, in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves by submitting to their husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you are her children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening." Huh. She turned out okay. Look also at Isaiah 51. An interesting reference here in Isaiah. First verse. "Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness, who seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were hewn, to the quarry from which you were dug. Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who bore you. For he was but one when I called him, that I might bless him and multiply him." The whole beginning books of Romans are about Abraham's faith. And Sarah's right there next to him in Hebrews. Something went right for her, even though it was not so good with Hagar and that whole situation. How do we know that she was truly loved? This is a really interesting reference in the Old Testament, because there's not a whole lot of women who were spoken of in this way. How do we know she was loved? Despite Abraham almost pawning her off a couple times. Look at Genesis 23 when she dies. Genesis 23, first verse. Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died at Hebron in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. He really loved her. It wasn't just like, yeah, whatever. She's gone. I'll remarry. He did remarry, but it took a while. He bought her the burial plot in Canaan, right, that became basically the area of around Jerusalem, right? And they were buried together. So it was important. It was important to him. All right, finally, as we're, you know, I'm 20 minutes in now on Sarah. I hope the others are not as interesting. They actually are. So thinking about Abraham and Sarah, how do we know that they had growth as a couple? Can you see some points along their journey, literal journey, where everything could have fallen apart, but somehow they stayed together, in a sense? And somehow they made it to the Hall of Faith. So what points of faith did Sarah have? Obvious one. Yeah, she didn't run after him and go. Right.
The obvious one, right, is the giving birth to Isaac, but that one where it's like, okay, well, I guess this is part of the plan.
Right. And you know, there was a transformation from when she laughed, when God told her that she was going to give birth. Well, Abraham laughed too. And somehow it says that she had faith that promise was going to happen.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, Sarah laughing really is more a representation of a demonstration of human nature that
sure.
People have, rather than her conscious disobedience. I don't think she was ever intending to be. I think that, you know, it was like, I'm going to work hard to believe this,
right,
even though it's difficult.
Yeah, and, you know, really good point. It's really hard to believe sometimes, isn't it? and not just like big promises, like you're going to have a child when you're 90, 91, right? Not big stuff, but how just the little promise that God will provide. I mean, there are times, I've had times in my life where I've been on my knees and I don't know how I'm going to get out of the pickle that I'm in. You know?
I mean, she also knew she was past the age where she could physically bear children.
Right.
And enough life had happened at that time that they knew what happened to women's bodies at a certain age.
Sure.
She knew, this is not going to happen for me.
Right.
And then to be told, like, hey, this is going to happen for you.
Right.
You know, it's not just that you're old, it's also that, like, knowing that your body physically is not supposed to be able to do this.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
When God came to Abram and said, you're going to have to move to a place you've never seen before.
Right.
She went right along with him the whole way. That God was going to make it.
Yeah, and anyone had a husband or a wife who has a job offer, and you guys have to pick up and go, and you're comfortable. I like these people. I like our house. This nice area. I like my neighbors. Why do we have to leave? Yeah, sometimes that takes faith. All right, good stuff. Anything else about Sarah since we're 25 minutes in now? All right, Deborah, Judges 4. Not a whole lot here in the scriptures about Deborah. Very interesting character. Female judge. What do we know about her? What else? We know she was a judge because she's in Judges.
She was a prophetess.
Yeah, she's a prophetess. What else?
She was a working woman.
She was married. How about that? How did Mr. Deborah feel about all that? I don't know. What else? What was it? What did she prophesy? What made her the prophetess in this passage? Remember?
Wasn't it promising victory to the brother Herod or Barak?
Yep. But how was that victory going to be gained?
Well, he wouldn't go if she didn't go with him.
Right. But what was
10,000 men.
What was the prophecy, though?
And a woman would go.
Yeah. So the first thing you would think, if you heard that prophecy, is that she's going to be the one who does it, right? Because she's the one that's kind of in the position of being the judge, and she's going to go with him. Because he's like, I won't go unless you go. Okay. Right? You would think that she's going to be the one who dispatches Sisera. Sisera? I don't know. But it isn't her. Who is it? Yeah. The most crazy, gutsy, courageous, violent woman in the Old Testament. How does she kill this guy?
Broke the temper taken into his temple.
Yeah, after giving him a glass of milk. Okay. What else about Deborah? What's the punctuation of her supporting Barak in this quest against Sisera? What's the last line of the song that they sing? I'm probably answering one of the questions.
They defeat the enemy, and the land had rest for 40 years.
40 years. In that day and time, that was a long time. That's a long time to have peace in the land. So what a legacy that she was not only a judge and a prophetess and conquered, but had peace for 40 years. All right, to the questions. We've already answered a little bit about this. What's unique about her? You can skip to the second part if you think we've already answered that. So how what's unique about her, and how would we envision a unique woman like her in our culture and time? Dun, dun, dun. Yeah?
And she was a prophetess, so she had command of the spiritual guidance for the people.
Right. And what must that say about her character?
That she has integrity, and that she has leadership, and that she has the ability to set an example for others to follow.
Right. Does God usually talk to unrighteous people?
Really.
Most of the time, the messengers of God are godly people. Most of the time. Sometimes, like in the New Testament, Caiaphas prophesied, but he didn't really understand it.
Eli, with regard to Hannah,
true.
Provided direction for
Well, true. And her sons turned out rotten.
Yeah.
Okay. So what else? What about envisioning a woman like this in our day?
Well, I was going to say that what I found unusual about her, I don't know if it'd be right to say completely unique, but she was, in effect, a military leader and the primary mover behind this military campaign.
Right.
Wouldn't it happen without her, it seems like. And I'm not sure I can think of another situation in the Old Testament quite like that. There might be one, I just don't know of
it. And really interesting that Barak says, hey, I really don't want to go unless you're going, right? Because what does that imply? I mean, you can draw implications. I don't know if we can know that it's true, but you could infer.
But if God is with her, I'd rather have somebody that God is with
right.
on my side
right.
versus somebody else.
Right. She must have had some track record of wisdom, leadership, results, godliness, something that made him say, I don't really want to do this without her on my side, with me, not just like far away.
So I'd like to ask a question now. Now, it says in verse 4 of chapter 4, now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth. Now, who is Lapidoth? And is that the only place he's mentioned?
I did not look that up because my focus is on the women.
Of course.
But I don't know that I've ever seen that referenced anywhere but in relation to her.
It's the only place.
Oh, thank you. Technology.
Yes, I know.
Go ahead, Josh.
No, it's not Google.
And going back to your previous point, it worked out for him to bring her along because she's the one who finished the job. She was in the right place, right time. There's obviously some sort of confidence.
Right. Right. And by making that happen, that Sisera fled like a coward instead of right and said, hey, can you hide me? Oh, sure, have a glass of milk.
Well, the other thing to remember is she was the judge.
Mm-hmm.
The judges were selected by God to do to deliver Israel. So being a judge just puts you in a different category of right off the bat. Not all the judges were as smart as they needed to be.
Samson?
Well, that's one of the things. There are others that are questionable on some of the things they did.
But yes.
Again, God raised a deliverer, a judge, and Deborah was one of them.
Yeah. And she accomplished his will. 40 years of peace. We already talked about what we learned from Deborah and Barak's song. And I think this is really cool that they have a song. I don't know who wrote it. I don't know if she wrote it or he wrote it or they wrote it together. Whether they just started singing, everyone sang along. I don't know. Seriously, you know that songs were a way that people could remember. I mean, that was like the hallmark. If you got a song, you did something important because people are going to sing that song. They're going to remember it. It's part of your history. You teach it to your kids. So it's pretty cool. And a lot easier to remember than Moses' song. How about number 7? Side note on Jael. What qualities do we see in her similar to Deborah's?
She knows how to drive a point.
She drove the point home. Right, you've been waiting for that. Yes. What else? And we'll see this in Abigail, too. This is a good bridge. Segue.
I think she was smart in the idea of that, if I could speak so frankly, is that she was kind of seen as invisible, so she used that to her advantage. So it's like a lot of times if we just embrace who we are, what we are, how others perceive us, it could always suit to our advantage.
Mm. Okay.
She had just want her remains.
Yeah, and there's that interesting kind of mix of quiet and gentle spirit with ferocious zeal and courage, right? I mean, even though he was a coward, he certainly could have turned on her and slit her throat, you know? He was in battle. He probably knows how to fight, even though he ran away. Yeah. And how about that? Teach your daughters to be like Jael. Okay. Yeah, who wants to marry this one? Yeah, very courageous.
I really like that example just because it shows it is possible to have a gentle and quiet spirit
right.
in a God-fearing way, but still have an incredible inner strength that can be used to make an impact, you know, on the people around you.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see that in Abigail. What a really wonderful example of a godly woman, you know, just like you say, who speaks softly and can carry a big stick, a sharpened stick. All right, 1 Samuel 25 is where we find that account. 1 Samuel 25. So this is right after Samuel dies. So who can give a summary? Who's an Old Testament scholar who knows this story inside and out?
She was wonderful and had a bad husband.
Yes. She had a bad husband. Creep. Jerk. Not a nice guy.
Harsh and badly behaved.
Yeah.
She was discerning and beautiful.
Yes, she was discerning and beautiful. And what happens here.
So the way God treats David disrespectfully, and Abigail intervenes and goes to David and says, "You know, have mercy, please," and brings him many things to traditionally appease his
right. Right. So it's a big no-no to shear someone else's sheep. Not cool. Like, how long did we wait for the wool to be ready? A long time, and you just took it. That's stealing. Not very nice. All right, so David hears about it. He and his men show up. What does Abigail do?
Goes to appease.
Yes.
1 Samuel 25:23. Now when Abigail saw David, she dismounted quickly from her donkey, fell on her face before David, and bowed down to the ground. She was being very humble and I'll say contrite for her rather foolish husband.
What did she do before that? Even before that, she prepared.
She made some stuff.
Not just some stuff.
It's a lot of stuff.
This woman is a master project manager. 200 loaves? How do you manage 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep prepared?
Well, and sometimes I think we sort of forget about, I think he was well off.
Well, yeah. That's still a lot to pull off.
Yes, and not only was he well off, I'm sure that Abigail was the head of the household.
Yep.
She made everything run.
Yep.
And all she had to do was say, get this, 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 and this.
Yes.
And it was done.
Yeah.
Something about a worthy woman.
Something about that. Where's that found? I don't know. Probably, yes. Which is the initial quote that I started out with at the end of. Okay. So is David okay with this? Is he like, nope, I'm just going to kill you guys? No, it worked. Right? It was well received. Now what? Nabal, the husband, creep, jerk. What happens next? Does he come home? She's like, yeah, you know, I kind of raided the storehouse a little bit and made things right with him so that you didn't get in trouble. Yeah, she didn't tell him, right? Why didn't she tell him?
He was too drunk to understand what she was
doing. He was drunk. Right. That is a pretty wise woman, isn't it? What generally happens when you try to argue with someone who's either drunk or not in his right mind? Enraged, beside himself,
it doesn't go well.
Irrational. No, it doesn't.
Of course, it didn't go well the next morning either.
For him. Yes. What happens to Nabal?
His heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And 10 days later, he died. It sounded like he stroked.
There is such a thing as providence. Right? And God had a plan. She didn't know what it was. And she didn't make it happen herself, right? She could have easily taken advantage of that situation, right? Hey, now's the perfect time for me to get in good with David. We got a good thing going here. I gave him some stuff. He's happy. Nabal's asleep. He's drunk. I just cut his throat. She didn't think about that, right? So God takes care of her, and she becomes what?
His wife.
Yeah, David's wife. This is the Abigail. The Abigail.
Too bad he didn't stop with Abigail.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Too bad he didn't teach his son any better. You know, but that's a really good point. With all of what happens to David and Solomon, I hope nobody's stealing my car. David was a man after God's own heart. The throne of David would never leave Israel. David's lineage would bring forth Christ. Okay, stop. I'm not going to do mine. Right? Even though Solomon fails at the end, he was perhaps the greatest king in historical terms of Israel, in terms of wealth, in terms of building, in terms of, you know, international relations. In terms of his writing, I mean, his Song of Solomon, Ecclesiastes, although sometimes we're not sure how to take Ecclesiastes in a couple places, right? Somehow, God finds a way to redeem us even when we seem like we're not redeemable. And such were some of you. All right. Questions? Oh, draw a parallel between Abigail's marital situation and relationships women find themselves in today. What approach did Abigail take? Yeah.
She was not going to backstab him. She wasn't going to speak
badly of him. Right. She was still going on behalf of him, which I think is pretty noble.
Yeah.
Because she could have just let him deal with the consequences of his action.
Yes. Ladies, how many times have you said, well, he got himself into this, he's going to have to get himself out of it? Right. Are there times where you've regretted decisions that you've made with regard to your spouse? Of course. You know, we all have those feelings, but we turn into them, right? We lean in and we say, I made a commitment. I took a vow. I'm going to seek the best in my other half. Sometimes I don't like my other half, but I'm going to seek his or her best. And that's what she displays here. And during a time like our culture, it's kind of easy, right? Got a job, got two cars, got a house, you know, don't have people knocking at my door trying to kill me. I was thinking of Sodom and Gomorrah. This was a time where it was not easy, as easy, to be a woman, right? Especially if you had a husband who was having concubines and children with other people that you knew. Right? Not easy to lean in sometimes. How was she displaying faithful submission when she didn't tell her husband what was going on? Is that being submissive?
I'd say in a sense it was, because she must have figured, well, he's really drunk. If I tell him now, it's just going to make the whole situation worse. Just
sure.
Enrage him.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually think she was in submission, and she was wise about that.
I mean, she was protecting him from the 600 young soldiers that are on his door.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Does that mean I have 5 more minutes, or it's done?
No, it's done. I'm sorry.
I didn't know. I can't figure out the doorbell thing. Like, is it 1 the first time and like 3 the second time? All right. So my encouragement would be to read over Psalm 31 and look at the qualities of the virtuous wife, but look at it in the context of what we've studied tonight in the character of these three women, and then come back to 1 Peter and to Hebrews 11. So thanks for all your participation, your thoughts.